Krishna is a painter. Just as an artist, when he or she is drawing a beautiful painting, maybe a nature scene, first they will draw the outlines, you know, of the trees and the mountains and the birds flying, and then slowly the artist will fill in more details, you know, more color, more leaves. So slowly, and then the finer details of the colors and the, you know, the minor things, so that suddenly when you see that, you say, wow, look at this scene. I pass by here every day and I don't notice the beauty that the artist does. That's the difference between him and us. The artist can see the beauty in the nature while you and I just walk by and say it's okay. So similarly, the teacher of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, here we see him here, is in this 18th chapter summarizing the entire Bhagavad Gita. So what he is doing is the points that he had covered in the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 6th and the various chapters, the broad outlines, he's now filling in details, you know, clarifying this, some points that he feels needs explanation. So the 18th chapter is the essence of the entire Bhagavad Gita, and the main points have been covered, emphasized and further, you know, clarified. And so that is why this chapter is very useful for all of us. So I thought I'll just briefly summarize what is the message of the Bhagavad Gita, why was it given. As you can see, there is a battle scene and the teacher is Krishna himself and the student is Arjuna. History, but in the Mahabharata war, there was a fight between the good. There were two families of cousins. One were the good called the Pandavas and the other were the evil called the Kauravas. And there was a conflict between them, which when it didn't get resolved, finally ended up in a battle situation where the evil were controlling the country and had to be driven out. But the leader of the Pandavas, the good cousins, was being driven by Krishna, who was his charioteer. And when he approached the battle field, he saw that on the other side were all my cousins and my grandfather and my teacher, people whom he loved and respected. But at this moment, he had to fight because it was his duty, because they were on the side of evil. They were corrupt, they were cheating, and they were dishonest. And so he had to do that, but he gets confused. What is my duty? If I indulge in this war, there will be a lot of killing, a lot of people will suffer. And so his will to fight goes away. And that's what happens to us also when we are out in the world and we are faced in a situation where we don't know what I should do, what is right, what is wrong, what is moral, what is immoral, what is correct, what is incorrect. Then the message of the Bhagavad Gita resonates with us, gives us clarity. And so the teacher here, Krishna himself, the Lord who was incarnated as Krishna and walked on this earth as a human, he gives him the message of this Bhagavad Gita, telling him what is his duty, why he needs to carry out his duty, even though it is unpleasant. Sometimes we are forced to do things that are unpleasant. So the entire 18 chapters is not only a teaching to Arjuna, but to all of us how we should live our life, how we should deal with the world, how we should deal with conflicts, problems, any situation in the world that we encounter, whether at work, whether with our family. Any problem, you will find the solution in the Bhagavad Gita. So it's not only a spiritual or religious book, but also is a book of action, book of karma. So we are in the 18th chapter, and as we said, the 18th chapter talks about Tyaga and Sannyas. We have covered that before. Tyaga is giving up the fruit of action, doing actions unselfishly, dedicated to the Lord, without I or my. And renunciation is the Sannyas, or renunciation is giving up the doership. Because we have this idea that I am the doer, I am doing I. But when the Lord is working through me, when I work with that attitude and I give up the doership, then my actions become pure, they become divine. And so in the earlier verses, Krishna says that people talk about renunciation, giving up work and going to the forest. But no matter where you are, whether you are working in an office or a home or a factory, there are certain three duties we should not give up. One is yajna, dana, and tapa. Yajna, dana, and tapa. Yajna is activities of service, serving the world. Dana is serving an individual or an organization, and tapa is self-improvement. Giving up some pleasure so that I may improve, I may evolve, so those should not be given up. And then we have talked about the three types of tyaga or three types of renunciation or giving up, abandonment. The lowest is where a person gives up out of misunderstanding, out of delusion. Like we had talked, like a student who is jilted in love and he's very unhappy and because his girlfriend told him, I don't want to see you anymore. So he goes and joins a monastery or becomes a priest, not because he has the renunciation, but out of false understanding. Rajasic is giving up because the work is too difficult. I've taken on this project, but it's too hard. So I just give up out of, because it's bodily discomfort. And the highest form of tyaga is giving up the fruit, giving up attachment, doing my duties without I or my, doing what is required. And so having studied all that, now we come to what are the results of action. Because as we said, this chapter is a summary of the entire Bhagavad Gita. So in the third chapter, he talks about karma yoga, the path of action. So the next few verses summarize the path of karma yoga. And the earlier verses were a summary of the fifth chapter, the fourth and fifth chapter, working without I or my, tyaga and renunciation. So he's covering different aspects. So today we shall see what are the results of karma. So if I ask you, how is your work? I say, well, it's okay. Some days it's very good. Some day, you know, it's really terrible. Some days it is mixed. How's your marriage? So again, you say, well, some days it is good, some days it is terrible. Most of the time it is mixed. So any activity that we do, any activity, these are the three results. They can be either bad, they can be good, or they can be maybe this or maybe that. So let us see how Krishna approaches this subject in verse number 12. Anishtamishtam mishrancha.
Anishtamishtam mishrancha.
Trividham karmana phalam.
Trividham karmana phalam.
Bhavatyatyaginam pretya.
Bhavatyatyaginam pretya.
Natu sanyasinam kvachit.
Natu sanyasinam kvachit.
Yeah, these are not in the papers. The papers were just for the beginning chant, so you can just listen. So, anishtam, ishtam, mishram. Anishtam means disagreeable. Results I did not want. Bad results. I did not want it. So, disagreeable. Ishtam means something is good. I wanted that result. I either get a result I didn't want, or I get a result I wanted, or mishram, mixed. It's okay. You know, it was neither good nor bad. Like you bought a house. You say, how is the house? Ah, it's a beautiful house. I love it. Another one said, I made a big mistake. You know, the house is a lemon. It has all kind of defects and all kind of problems. And, you know, the plumbing is leaking. I should have checked it. And, oh, it's a terrible house. And the third one said, well, it's okay. You know, I like the living room and the family room. But the kitchen is kind of small. And the bedrooms are okay. So, in every situation, you may have these three kind of results. Ishtam, anishtam, and mishram cha. Trividham karmana phalam. So, every activity that we do, all actions have these three results. Can have either of those three results. Sometimes one or the other. Something I like, a car I drove for the first year was very good. And then it started giving me problems. And so, it can happen. So, trividham karmana phalam bhavati, they happen to who? Atyaginam pretya. Pretya means after death. Not only after death, but also in this life while we are living, these three results can come. To who? Atyagi, to one who does not renounce, one who does not have this abandoning the results, the giving up the results, the tyaga is the attitude of doing my best without worrying about the results, dedicating all my activities to the Lord, working for the benefit of others is called tyaga. So a person who does not work with this attitude, with works with the attitude of what can I get out of it, everything is for me, myself and I, and how can I be more successful, how can I be more rich, how can I be, so I can have more power. So a person who works with that attitude will have those results. Sometimes he will be happy, sometimes unhappy, sometimes, you know, mixed. But natu sanyasi nam kvachit, but a person who has renounced the doership, renounced the enjoyership, is not even concerned about ego. There is no ego, there is no I or my. He is working as an instrument of the Lord, and whatever actions are happening at thy will be done, O Lord, not mine, not mine. And with that attitude, when such a person works, that is called a sannyasi. And to that person, there is no actions do not bind him. Actions do not tie him down. So this is the translation. And the verse is kind of pretty, has a lot of discussion. So most of the hour today will be spent in that. The other two verses are very short. So we'll see how much time we have. So when we talk about an action, there are two results, two effects. One is the actual physical effect and one is the subtle effect. Like I decide to build a factory. Okay, so I build a factory, so I hire workers and I produce a product and it sells very successful. So that is the gross effect. Okay, I did it, it was very successful. But then there are subtle effects. Subtle effects are I become very attached to the result. I must be very successful. I must be the number one producer in the whole country. So I do things that are dishonest. I do things to cheat others. I do compete unfairly. So I develop these inner, you know, tendencies. I become jealous of somebody who is more successful than me. I become angry when my work is not done. So the outer effects we see, the product is selling or not selling, but there are inner effects that affect my personality. Here in this chart, we can see with the body, I perceive the objects. With the mind, I feel the emotions. With the intellect, I think the thoughts. And then the V stands for vasanas or tendencies or habits. And Om represents God's presence up above. God is in every one of us. You can call him Om. You can call him Jesus, Buddha, Krishna, Shiva. So what happens is that at the body level, I see some results, you know, at the physical level. Body means at the physical level. I'm seeing the production growing. So at the physical level, at the body, at the physical level, I see the results of the action of the factory. But what are the effects on my mind, on my intellect, on my thinking, you know, all the anger and the competitiveness and the jealousy and the desire and the selfishness, those are called the subtle aspects which nobody else can see, but I can experience. And then what that does is creates more vasanas. As I get more, I want more. If I don't get it, I become very competitive. And so I create more and more selfish tendencies in me. Or if I get a lot, I become more greedy. So the subtle aspects are not visible, but the physical aspects are visible to all. So that is the result of the action. It's not only what we see, but the tendencies it leaves in my mind. And these vasanas, we know, we have studied and we'll talk a little more about it, not only affect my actions in this life, but they carry on with me in future lives. Whatever actions I do, if the vasanas are there, they affect my actions in this life as well as in future lives. I am not done with them. Also with my karmas, with my good or bad actions, they carry effects into multiple lifetimes. And what we see is that the present determines the future. What I do today, we all know that. You know, what I do today, if I plant a tree, if I plant a rose bush, it will flower in a few months. But if I plant a mango tree, it will give fruit in 10 years. Same way, you know, if I build a store or set up a store, some people are very successful right away. Some people, it takes a year or two for the business to pick up. Some people never pick up and they have to end up shutting the store or shutting the restaurant. So my actions today will decide the results in the future. And it can be the future, can be tomorrow, can be next month, next year, 10 years, or can be next lifetime. That's what we believe, that we do not have only one body. This one body I occupy, but when I die, the body I drop. But this individual called the mind or intellect, this subtle body that we all have, this mind and intellect, this subtle body leaves. And then after a certain amount of time spending in heaven or hell, I then take on a new body based on my actions and based on my desires. So the vasanas are my desires which give me the present life. So the present determines the future. And Swami Vivekananda very beautifully expressed that. He was a great saint in the 20th century. He says, every action that we do, not only every action, even every thought that we have in our mind, the thoughts are also actions. You might say, well, I didn't hit that person. But if you think negative about the person, or you try to, get anger about that person, you physically you may not do anything, but you are creating negative karmas. So Swami Vivekananda says, every thought or every action becomes a seed for future. And where does the seed go? The seed goes in my subtle body. It becomes a vasana, becomes a tendency. And then that seed sooner or later will fructify, sooner or later will grow, sooner or later will appear and give fruit. And so that is how we determine our destiny. Our destiny is not controlled by some god sitting up there who decides, I'm going to punish this guy and I'm going to bless him. We are all blessed and punished by our own karmas. So whatever karmas we have done in the past appear as destiny in the present and in the future. We had Vimalji here this week, and some people wanted me to go over in a little bit more again. I don't know if you're interested in listening, because some of the points he covered were very powerful. So I thought very briefly we'll go over that. So it helps us all to revise what Vimalji did. I mean, his talks were really beautiful. So he said that how do we make our destiny? How do we make our future? So he said by thought, every action starts as a thought. Like you all decided to come here. So you had a thought in the morning that I'm going to go to this class. And you know, other people may be playing golf or playing cricket or watching TV or doing whatever. But the thought arose, and then the thought gets into words. Okay, you tell your spouse, okay, you know, today I'm going to that class, or we are together going to that class. So that thought becomes speech, and then speech becomes an action. Then you get in your car and you drive here. So every action, so repeated thoughts lead to words, words lead to actions, and repeated actions lead to habit, right? If I get up in the morning, I was not born with a cup of coffee in my hand, right? No, but now a cup of tea or coffee, unless I have it, I cannot get my day started. I have to have that, you know, or I have to go to Starbucks. So start with one cup, two cups, three cups, and soon it becomes a habit. So actions lead to habits. Habits lead to character, and character leads to destiny. So destiny, again, it's by our own thoughts. We create the actions, then we create the habits and the character and the destiny. So the choice is ours. We have a choice whether to evolve or whether to go downwards, whether to choose the path of good. We will be covering in Kathopanishad when Vimalji comes back. He will be talking about the path of Shreya and Preya. What is good and what is pleasant? Something may be pleasant for me, give me a lot of fun, but may not be good for my future. On the other hand, something may be tough at now, but by doing it, I can improve my future. So the choice is ours whether to grow, to remain the same, or to sink. So based on my actions, I evolve. You know, if I am a student and I work hard and I become very successful, I go to a good college, and then if I come out of an Ivy League college, then my chances of getting a good job are better. So I have a chance to get better, or I have a chance, I'm in school, or I don't need to study, I just, you know, going to have fun, get involved with friends and drugs. Or same way for us, you know, with my actions, I can either spiritually evolve, or I can go downward by getting into bad habits and all that. Or I can remain the same. Okay, it's an average life, you know, just continue it, let it go. And everybody else is doing it, I also may as well do it. I neither improve nor I get down, but I just live, you know, jina hai to jilo, you know, the whole life I have to live, I might as well just live it. Dunya desa na, dunya mein aaye hain to jina hi padega. So it's a very passive attitude. It's okay, I have no choice, you know, life is there, whatever life throws at me, let me do it. No, I have to improve, I have to become a better individual. So I can either grow, be the same, or sink. And similarly in my next life. Because based on my activities in this life, if I have been a very good person or I have been a very bad person and I did not get the results of my good or bad actions and I die before that, that's what Arjuna asks Krishna in the 6th chapter. Krishna says, nothing is wasted. If you have done good actions, you will get good results. If you have done bad actions, you will get bad results. So as a human being, what is my outcome of my good action? Suppose I have lived life in a very good fashion, sattvic, very saintly individual, very good individual, then what will happen is I'll become a devata, I'll become an angel in heaven, I'll become the celestial powers, you know, that run the whole universe, the gods in heaven, the demigods. And so I may enjoy years and thousands of years in heaven. Or if I have done very evil deeds, also then my next life, I will be a more evolved individual. I'll be born in the house of yogis, in the house of spiritual people, where I'll continue my spiritual journey. But a person who has lived an average life, you know, theek hai, I have just done, then he will or she will be born again as a human. Either I could become a god in heaven, or I can become a human, or in my next life, I might become a cockroach or a crocodile or a snake. Why? Because if my actions have been so evil, then as a result of that action, whatever the consequences are, and you think about a crocodile or an alligator, what is his whole thing is mouth. His only mouth, right? Nothing else. So his whole purpose is eating, and there are many individuals like that too. They live to eat. So do you live to eat or do you eat to live? So, or like a cockroach, you know, they're living in the dark. The moment you turn on the light, they're afraid and they run away. So the choice is mine. And it to say that there is somebody up there who gave me this destiny and made me suffer is absolutely wrong logic, because God cannot be partial. He cannot be favorite. That I love this particular individual and I hate this. No, God is the same. He loves all of us. But whatever happens to us is because of our actions. So they say, how does the mind and intellect remember? Okay, I died in this life. And then maybe after 50 years or 20 years, I'm born again to some other mother, father, I'm born again. Who carries that information? Is there a supercomputer, you know, maybe IBM has supplied a huge computer to God that is, you know, bigger than any computer. No, he does not need to do that. What he does is implant a little chip. We each carry a little microchip in us, like an Intel chip, you know, and each one of us, and that they call as vasanas. So each one of us is carrying a little chip, a memory chip that controls, that has all the data in it. Just as a little chip from Intel you buy has all the data, you know, it can keep thousands of RAMs, and I don't know all those terms now. How many data, megabytes, gigabytes, I can't keep up with those. But just as that Intel chip can carry so much data, so in us, we carry this in the form of vasanas, that's the little chip that we carry that has all the memories of all my actions done in this life, all my attitudes, all my behavior. And so then the kind of life I get is based upon my actions and based upon my desires. And that is how, you know, the whole creation functions. The example they give is like a criminal. Like suppose there is a criminal who commits a crime, you know, robs a bank and takes off with millions of dollars. Now he wants to hide the money. So what does he do? He gets a false passport, has arranged beforehand, and changes his appearance, cuts his hair, colors them, puts a mustache and does all those things, and then he leaves the country. So with the false passport, and he transfers his money abroad, and then he starts living in Brazil or Argentina or somewhere with his loot, and he buys a house and with a false name. But the FBI and the Interpol can still track him. You will find sometimes people after 5 years, 10 years, they have been caught. I don't know how they do that, but they have ways of tracking these people down. And even he has changed his name, changed his appearance, changed everything, he still gets caught. Why? Because they have the ability to capture the data. So similarly, we also, even though I'm born in a different country, if I have a different name, maybe I was a male, I became a female, I have a different name, different appearance, different color, it doesn't matter. The chip will find you. The data will find you. Your karmas will recognize you. They will, no matter where you are, you will be caught. Whether it could be good actions. Karma doesn't have to be only bad. But even the good actions I have done could end up in good results. This reminds me of a story. So there was this lady who was traveling in a bus, and the bus toppled over and fell down the ravine, and a lot of people died. Only about 5 or 6 survived. And she was one of them that was just barely alive, ended up in the hospital, and she was in a deep coma, and she passed away. And so she went up to God, and God was looking through his computer, and he says, look, sorry, there has been a computer error. You are not supposed to die. You were the one of them who was supposed to survive. You still have another 20 years to live. But this happened very instantly. So she went up there, and instantly she was sent back because of the error. And you have another 20 years to live. Don't worry. And so they were wondering what's happening to her. They were doing CPR, thinking that she's dead, and she came back, the mind and intellect, and she got revived, and she was fine. She was okay, and soon she recovered from her injuries and got discharged. And she was so happy. You know, look, I almost died. I actually did die. I went to God, and he told me I have 20 years, so now I'm going to enjoy life, you know, because I'm so lucky I got my life back. So she goes out and celebrates. You know, she buys all expensive clothes and jewelry, and has her hair done and colored, and then has makeup done and has plastic surgery, new face, new chest, new legs, hips, belly, everything brand new, makes herself beautiful, and buys a brand new Porsche, and she's driving, you know, and her hair is now blonde, and she's, you know, everything is. And as she comes out of the Porsche dealership with the driving the car, she gets hit by a drunk driver, and she's dead. So she goes back to God, and she's so mad, you know. She says, God, you told me I have 20 years. How come I am here with you again? God said, sorry, I didn't recognize you. So, no, but that doesn't happen. God will recognize. So the point is that you cannot escape your karmas. You cannot escape. Actually, the Mahabharata has a very beautiful, how many people know how many verses are in the Mahabharata? Can anybody tell me? We all read them. How many verses? 720. No, that's in the Bhagavad Gita, is 701. The Bhagavad Gita has 701. I'm talking about the entire Mahabharata, the whole story of Pandavas and Kauravas.
32,000. Aapko
nahi pata?
32,000 or
something. Actually, you are all partially correct. Actually, there are 100,000 verses. Yeah, 8,000 are the first one which were written by Ved Vyasji. Then the Vaishampayan wrote another 32. And then Ved Vyasji, and then there was another author who wrote 100,000 verses. So 100,000 verses are in these. So it started with 8,000, then 32,000, and then went to 100,000. Actually, they say that Vyasji actually composed several hundred thousand verses because he was also teaching Mahabharata to the other worlds, to the devtas and all. So for them, the additional, because as the Mahabharata was going on here, there was activity. So because the worlds, we live in multiple universes. So it's much more than that. But for our availability, there are 100,000 verses. So in the Mahabharata, and the Gita, of course, is a part of the Mahabharata. It appears in the middle of the Mahabharata during the war. So in that, in the Mahabharata, they have given a very beautiful example. Very beautiful. They say, it's like there is a calf, right? And now, suppose this little baby calf, she's born, and there's a herd has 1,000 cows. You know, if you travel up, go on up I-5, you find these 1,000 cows, and it's a dairy farm, and where the cows are, you know, kept for their milk, not slaughtered, and so the milk is taken from the cows and then, you know, sold and all. So the cows are fed and taken care of. Now this baby calf is just born a few days old, but she recognizes, she knows that even there are 1,000 cows, and if the baby is somewhere, she'll go through the legs in between. And even the mother may be on the other side. How she can find, we don't know. 2,000 cows she can recognize, my mother, you know, my mother, this is my mother, and she'll go and get the milk from her mother. So similarly, the karmas will find you. You may have changed your life. You may be, you know, you may be walking down the street, you know, very just minding your own business. You have not harmed anybody. You have not done anything bad. And you're standing on the side of the road. I remember the incident where this lady who was under the influence of some drugs, and there was a big crowd of people in some fair or festival, and she drove her car deliberately off the road on the sidewalk and killed, like, I don't know, 27 people and injured 100 people or something like that. So many people. Now, these poor guys were just sitting there watching the fair. They had not harmed anybody. Not suddenly a car comes from the back and hammers them. Who? What was that? That was the calf. That was the calf, because just as the calf says, not this is not my mother, this is not my mother, that one is my mother. So the karma will say, not this guy, not this guy. Ah, that's the one I need to catch. So the karma will find you wherever you are, whatever you are doing. So nothing escapes. No good deed goes unrewarded. No bad deed goes unpunished. That's why one has to be very cautious. And as we said, you have to be cautious about your thoughts, not only your actions, because your thoughts result in speech, result in action. So be very conscious, because even negative thoughts result in negative karmas. So how do we... how do we control the actions? Again, Vimalji had talked about it a little bit. I'll just reiterate that point. The lectures this time were beautiful. They were very good. So he says that the subtle controls the gross. Like, there are sense organs. The sense objects are subtler than the sense organs. I used to think the other way. Sense organs are subtler than the objects. But the Upanishad says, no, the objects are subtler than the sense organs. Why is that? Because when I see something or hear something and I see an object, I get tempted. Like I go to the mall, I'm only going to go and buy one item, maybe a shirt or, you know. And then I go there and then I find so many. Oh, I find some golf clubs. You know, I haven't bought new golf clubs. So I buy a whole set of golf clubs and balls and shoes. My wife said, what happened? You just went to buy a shirt? Where all this came from? Or a lady, she said, I'm just going to go buy one item. And then sooner she finds herself in the clothes. You know, I have, these are the new dresses. They have just come out, the new, you know, fashions. Her closet is so full, there is no space to put more clothes. But, you know, a whole handful of clothes, or in a jewelry shop. So even though I have no desire, but the sense objects control me, or I taste, I want to eat something. You know, I know this is not good for me, but it's okay once in a while. I have diabetes, but it's okay once in a while to have a donut. What's the harm? So the sense objects control the senses. It should be the other way around. I should decide what I see, what I hear, what I smell, what I taste, what I touch. But the objects control us. So the objects are subtler than the senses. Now, what is subtler than the senses and the objects is the mind. The mind ultimately controls, decides, I should do this, I should not do this. And of course, the mind is controlled by the intellect, by the discriminating capacity. The mind decides, okay, mind tells the eyes, look here, hands, do this, you know, do this, don't do this. But ultimately, it is the intellect, which is the discriminating capacity, which controls the mind. So the subtler than the mind is the intellect. Subtler than the intellect is the total intellect of all of us, and subtler than that is the Lord, Saha, He. So the Upanishad says that you have to use your higher faculty to control your lower. Don't let the objects decide what I should see or hear. I should use my intellect. If I have an important project due tomorrow, or if I have a test tomorrow, or if I have something to do, I should not waste my time the day before. Even though I feel like, let me have some fun, let me have a party, let me know. My intellect decides that what is right I should do. So let the intellect control the mind, and ultimately let the Lord within control. So let me work under the guidance of the Lord within me. And so that is called from gross to subtle. So that is how one should live one's life. And let the subtle control the gross. Let the gross not control the subtle. And so that is how you evolve from the sense organs to the objects, from the objects to the mind. So from the body to the mind. So the mind should control the body. The intellect should control the mind. And then the Lord Om should control everything. So my whole action should be controlled by the higher. So the path of spirituality, as he says, atyagi, so people who do not give up my selfishness, they suffer and they keep taking multiple births again and again, going through the same process, and they suffer. If they have, their life has been very selfish, very hateful, they suffer. But those who can detach, those who can detach from the objects, emotions and thoughts and attach to the higher. So Swami Chinmayananda says, detach and attach. Detach does not mean you don't do your duties, but do your duties as a dedication to the Lord. And when I work with that attitude, holding on to the Lord, attaching to the Lord, then what happens? Then my mind becomes pure. So doing activities that are unselfish, that are dedicated to the Lord, that are done for the benefit of mankind, for helping others, you know, what people like Jesus or Buddha or Shankaracharya or Mahatma Gandhi or Martin Luther King, the way Cesar Chavez, the way they live their life of service, you know, Nelson Mandela. So people who live that kind of life, their mind becomes pure. So it says purify. So detach from the lower and attach to the higher. Then purify your mind. Make your mind pure, full of love, compassion, kindness, sharing. And as you purify your mind, when your mind is pure, has very little of agitations, very little of vasanas, very little of selfishness, then such an individual can then sit for meditation, can sit for contemplation. And in that silence of his or her meditation, the person's vasana, selfish tendencies get burnt away, get destroyed, and then he reaches a state of be, just be. Do not become, but be. See, our attitude is, I want to become. I am this, but I want to become that. I want to reach that. Why? To get happiness. But a person who is happy, it does not mean that the person doesn't work. Is not. In fact, his or her actions are more pure. They become, instead of my actions, they become the Lord's actions. And so he becomes a force for change in society. He becomes a prophet, becomes a saint. And so that is called the state of be, of being, I am. And that is sannyas. So when a person reaches that state of sannyas, where he no longer is the doer or enjoyer, then the results do not come to him. Then whatever actions are done, because that individual no longer exists, no longer. That ego is gone. It does not mean that that individual is not there, but just as that criminal Ratnakar became Valmiki, Siddhartha, the prince, became Gautam Buddha. It was a new individual. The prince living in the palace that was Siddhartha became Gautam Buddha, the saint, the monk, and they were two different individuals. So whatever actions that person has done as Siddhartha no longer touch this individual because that individual no longer exists. So when you realize or go beyond the world and become a true sannyasi, sannyasi does not mean give up your clothes and put on orange clothes, but when you work without ego and totally dedicated to the Lord, then that absolute oneness with the Lord, as Jesus said, he who has seen me has seen the Father in heaven. So seeing Jesus, you see the Father, means there is no difference between the two. So that attitude, or like Buddha, he talked about nirvana, that there is no fire of vasanas, nothing. In total, such an individual goes beyond, and to such an individual, the karmas do not affect him. In fact, his karmas become pure, you know, become out of love, and whatever past karmas, so that calf cannot find that individual. That individual, because that individual has grown so much that the mother is no longer existing. He becomes one with all the mothers, in that all the cows in that whole herd are him. That oneness comes. And so that is the growth. That is what we have to. So that's why Krishna says, one who does not live with this attitude of service again and again suffers the same fate and goes through all the problems. But one who works for others without ego, a true sannyasi, goes beyond the karmas. So the point is that we have to do actions, but do them dedicated to the higher. And that's the only way to go beyond the law of karma. You know, people say, oh, my karmas are so bad. Karma is not a punitive path. Karma is an educational path. It is meant to educate us, to teach us to evolve. So any comments, any questions?
How like a person is supposed to like see that as, because like in that way, you're not extending some kind of empathy or sympathy towards that.
Right. No, that's a very good point. Thank you for bringing that up. Because a lot of people, I also think about. So as an individual, if I am there, I have to go help them. If I can help them, you know, take them to the hospital, clean them, stop the bleeding. I don't say, oh, this person deserved to have. No. I have shown sympathy and empathy, but the person who is suffering, a lot of times they say, why me? You know, why is it happening to me? Why is it not happening to my neighbor? My neighbor is lying and cheating and doing all the bad things. Why is he not suffering? Because he is enjoying the results of his past actions sooner or later. So when it happens to me, I should see that there must have been something. But an individual, like suppose somebody's blind or somebody's hurting, I don't say this person deserves to suffer. As a human being, it is my duty to be sympathy and empathy. That is called a saint. See, saints do not say all of you guys need to suffer. No, they go out and serve the world. So as an individual, as a human being, it is my duty, whether it's an animal or whether it's a plant or whether it's a human or whoever is hurting or suffering, I do that, again, not to accumulate good karmas, but out of love and compassion. And in the process, I will accumulate good karmas. But my goal is not, oh, I should do good, so I'll go to heaven. No, my goal is, I should do my best. And that's a very good point. That person who is hurting and the person standing beside has an obligation to help that individual who is hurting, stop his bleeding, you know, give him some sympathy, take him to the hospital, and later on, maybe go visit him in the hospital, see he's doing well or not. Yes. So definitely, we don't say that this individual deserved it and he deserves to suffer. Whoever is suffering in this world, if I have the ability to help, I must help. Not helping is I'm violating my duty as a human being. So I should serve the world. I should help as many people as I can. But with the right understanding that it is my duty. But the person who is hurting, so tomorrow suppose something happens to me and I get sick or I get hurt, I should not blame God or my neighbor or my boss or my wife or my husband or my children. It is my own karmas that are coming and have caught me. So that's an excellent point. Thank you for bringing it up.
If God created like Adam and Eve, but then God put something in them that God does not have, and it's almost like that was like the seed. And I was wondering, is that ego or what is the Hindu explanation?
I think the explanation is he gave them freedom to choose. And so, I mean, they were in his image, but they were not God. They didn't have all the supernatural powers. They were humans with limited body, limited mind, limited intellect, limited lifespan. God lives forever. Human beings don't live forever. God is infinite. Humans are finite. God is omnipotent. Humans have limited power. God is omniscient. Humans have limited knowledge. So you can call them as individual souls. Some religions believe, at least one of the religions I have studied, that which believe in Dvaita. Some of them believe in Advaita, that there was only one. And this whole world is an illusion, but that is at the highest level. But at the day-to-day level, they say that God was there and there were these souls. So Atma and Paramatma, that's how they distinguish. These were these individual souls who were living in heaven and were very happy. They were enjoying, but they... Every day is happiness. You know, every day is happy. So after a while, they got bored of happiness. What is it? Every day, same thing. I can have pizza, you know, 365 days, and I don't gain weight. And I can, you know, and my cholesterol remains fine. And then I can, you know, enjoy. So every day, so it became boring after a while. So they said, we want to experience variety. So God says, okay, I'll create this world for you where you go to experience variety. But there will be variety of things, good and bad, you know. And then he created the Garden of Eden, which was perfect place. The Garden of Eden was a perfect place. Animals, birds, plants, all lived in perfect harmony and everything. But then he put humans in there and gave them a free will. A cow doesn't have a free will. Lion doesn't have a free will. A plant doesn't have a free will, but a human has. And so this was an experiment. It says in one of the Upanishads, it says God actually was so happy. He said, wow, I've created this very intelligent being who has a choice to think, and let me see what he does. So it was an experiment. And so he sent us down here in this beautiful Garden of Eden to choose what we want. And then, and that's why, like even right in the beginning, the Abel and Cain, right? The who killed Cain killed Abel or Abel. Already it started. The children of Adam and Eve already is for killing each other. So we, right from the beginning, we have a choice to make good or bad choices. You know, we have the choice. All of us have. And so that's how we made a mess of this world. This world, Garden of Eden, was beautiful. By men coming, they made a mess. We polluted the air. We polluted the rivers. We polluted the ocean. I mean, warming. So we have made a mess of this place. Again, not in a pessimistic way. There are a lot of good people also. There are saints and, you know, evolved people. So there are good or bad, but the whole creation was just an experiment. And the way to look at this world is just look at it as a play. I have said again and again, look at it as a drama. And that's how the creation started. And same thing they say in Upanishad also. They talk about Manu. Manu was the first man. He was the first lawgiver. And then Shatruti or Shatruti something was his wife's name. And the same thing. They had 1,000 children, you know, or something like that. They had so many children and then they all multiplied. And so the creation started like that. It started with the... He had created this beautiful world for us to populate. Yeah, that's how. Most of the scriptures talk about that. Yes.
So that means human beings can their own
karmas? We do.
But animals not.
Animals not. Yeah, we constantly create karmas. Constantly. Every action, every thought is creating a karma. But animals don't. Like we have talked many times, a lion cannot say, oh, I'm going to become a vegetarian lion from tomorrow, only eat grass, because killing of animals is bad. No, a lion knows the only way I can survive is to kill a deer. So next time a deer comes by, he will pounce on it. And, you know, tear him apart and into pieces and bleed and pain and all. He doesn't get any negative karmas.
But then if we do something wrong and then we demote ourselves to
animals, yes,
or insect, then
No, but then we have a chance to evolve. Yeah, because the animals are also evolving. The Darwin's theory of evolution. You know, we started as protozoa, then we became fish, and then we became the land fish, you know, that walk on ground, and then we became animals, and then monkeys and humans. So, yes. So we do evolve. Animals are in the process of evolution. They are not stuck in the animal phase. Trees also, once a tree perishes, it'll the soul in the tree, the mind and intellect. The tree also has very subtle, very minimal intellect, but it has. Because the tree knows that if there is shade, it will grow towards the light. So even the tree has. So we all have the intellect and mind. But in the humans, it is a fully evolved. So yeah, they don't create karmas. They just, like that General Sherman, you know, which has been living for 2,500 years. You say, oh my God, that poor tree, 2,500, before Christ, if you go to, you know, the Sequoia. But then at that level, the tree doesn't feel, oh, I'm suffering. A tree is happy being a tree. You know, that's his life. It's not that 2,500 years the tree has been suffering. The tree is enjoying its treehood. So that's at that level, they don't think. They don't have that. Like you and I would say, oh, God, it's so sad, 2,500 years. The tree's there. It's fine. He's happy. Thank you. That's a good question. Yeah.
So we have to take the mixed life as it comes, right?
True. But I take it as it comes, but then what do I do with my life? That is the choice. And that is, I can make a good choice or a bad choice. And the same situation, you know, that arises, like an illness, you know, two people are sick in the hospital. One person says, it's okay, Lord. I was meant to get sick. I'm fine. I'll recover. And another person, why am I sick? Why am I suffering? I am so miserable. I am crying and constantly cries about it. Other one says, yeah, I'm sick. I'll take medicine. I'll get well. So the same, the two next to each other in the bed, same illness, but one is taking it, you know, it's okay. It's meant to be. Other one is just crying and complaining and shouting at the nurses, throwing things and becoming a nasty. So the choice is, that's where you make the choice. When the situations happen in life, how do I deal with them? And so all this law of karma is for me. It's not, that's why you ask the question, it's not to judge others. Why is she suffering? What is happening to me? So this whole scripture is meant for me, not to judge my wife or my husband or my neighbor. So the choice is how you take the life and then how you evolve. If your goal is spiritual evolution, then you will act according to that. And even, you know, look at all these saints, how much they suffered. Look at Mirabai, look at Tukaram, Sant Gyaneshwar, you know, all of them, Jesus. They all suffered, but they did not complain about life. And they evolved. Through that pain, they take it as a learning experience. That pain and suffering, actually, if you read Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now, he went through intense depression, but he used that depression to come out of his body, and he became a realized master. Going through that sorrow, which somebody else would might have committed suicide or, you know, overdose on drugs, he used that depression to come out. And if you listen and talk to him, such an evolved individual, you know, walking saint is, you can see in him. I have had the good fortune of, you know, spending some time with him. Spent a whole week one time in New York. So meeting such people, you see how they take their adversity and become evolved people.
But would you call that as a previous good karma he has done?
Yeah, I'm sure he has done some, you know, good karmas for which he had that right understanding. But then he still made a choice. You know, humans have the choice. We are not pawns of karma, that just my past karma, so I just have to know. Even though we are born with certain vasanas, certain tendencies, certain karmas, as a human being, we have the choice. Like the two paths, you know, the path of good or the path of fun. And when you choose the path of good, of service, that's what happens to that cow. When she becomes so giving, so unselfish, then she no longer, that calf cannot find her because she's become one with all the other cows. So a saint is the one who evolves to such an extent that then that person goes beyond this body, mind and intellect. So that is the difference between us and the saint. We are still stuck in our karmas, but the saint has gone beyond it. So the choice he still made, I'm sure he had some inside, he knew that what do I have to do?
So like the calf is still there wandering, so where does it go?
No, the calf has grown up.
Oh, okay.
The calf has grown up, doesn't need the mother anymore.
Okay.
So that's the final example, is the calf also grow up and it doesn't need the mother. It's not that the calf is now wandering, because the calf is grown up. So the action is gone.
So
that negative karma is gone, is dissolved. So the calf has grown up. So then he doesn't need the mother anymore. He can now get grass on his own. So it's just, I mean, example is, you know, for an example, you cannot 100% transpose it to human life. But the idea is that that person is so evolved, then that karma is disappeared.
But it appears it also could be used as a service.
Yes.
How many ways it can be used?
Actually, if you, I again don't know, I'm not that much of a scholar of Sanskrit, but all of such words, like if you use, take the word dharma, yajna also means getting together and working for the benefit, like we have talked about, like say if the village is offering a yajna, there has been no rain or for good luck, so then everybody gathers together and they prepare that yajna kunda, and then they bring the supplies and light the fire. Somebody brings milk, somebody brings offerings, somebody cleans the place, somebody builds the... So people who work together for the, you know, with self-sinking, their selfish differences is also called yajna.
So that's an activity.
Activity, right, right.
But it's also used as an
offering. As an offering, it's also used as service.
Sacrifice,
and also sacrificing myself for the benefit of all. That is also yajna. So yajna, like the word dharma, if you look in the Sanskrit dictionary, has meanings that extend to two pages. And the word dharma. So Sanskrit, that is the beauty of the language, that based on the context, the same word will have lots of meanings. Actually, dharma has so many meanings.
But it's also used like a curse. Oh, it's my karma, you know.
Yeah, but that is because of the law of karma. It is used as a curse, but actually it is an action. But it can also be my good karma. Like we must have done good karmas to be sitting here talking about Bhagavad Gita. If you have not done good karmas, you wouldn't be sitting here. It is the Lord's blessing and our good karmas that have brought us here. I always, every morning I bow down to all of you, because of without you I wouldn't be here, you know, discussing and preparing all that. So
you
must have done a lot of good karmas. No? True.
The same goes on even river.
Right, right. Right, right. No, but we have to have done good karma. Otherwise, why would I, you know, so much, this is a difficult book in Sanskrit. You know, to learn it is itself takes effort, and we are so blessed. And that's why we have all these saints like Vimalji and Swami Ishwarananda and all coming. That also is our good karma. To be exposed to such saints and to be in their company, even just to sit with them, is good karma. Those of us who have seen Swami Chinmayananda himself, you know, walk and talk. And what happened is, I have an individual mind. I have a mind and intellect. That is my thoughts, my emotions. It's not only in my body. People just think thoughts are in the brain. They are not in the brain. The mind and intellect is subtler than the body. Actually, my mind and intellect pervades outside the body. That's why in meditation, you can actually watch the body. People even have out-of-body experiences where they can get out of the body and the body still lives. And if you talk to saints and yogis, they have done that. So there is an individual mind and intellect. And then there is a cosmic mind, which they have given the name Hiranyagarbha. The cosmic mind. And what is that? That is the sum total of all the minds put together. It's not somebody else is controlling it. It is my mind and her mind and your mind and the plant's mind and the animal's mind and the birds and the fish. All of them have a mind and intellect, which is small or big. Some people have more intellect, some people have less. So the total mind, the total intellect, which is called Hiranyagarbha, is the sum total of all our thoughts, all our emotions. So when we say we are influenced by others, it's to a limited extent. It's like now in the election season, every day if you watch TV and you just watch Trump, then your mind becomes violent, you know. That's why people go to his rallies. Either they're ready to kill him or his followers are ready to kill the others. Why? Because he has promoted this attitude of violence. And so the more you watch TV, the more you get influenced by that. So So that is called the total mind. Even you're watching TV or reading the newspaper, or now, of course, nowadays people don't read newspaper. I'm still, I guess, I'm one of the few ancient people who actually buys the Bakersfield Californian. Probably five of us in this room. But you know, so people who read on the internet. So the internet is the cosmic mind. What is Wikipedia? Everybody is putting their ideas and then combine and become, so that is the total mind. It's the sum total of everybody's emotions, everybody's thoughts. So when we say that mind is influencing us, that's a very good point. It influences if you allow it to. If you get involved, there's so many bad things happening, the world is violent, there is so much terrorism, then I get depressed. If I watch it as a play, okay, in the world there are good and bad. I do not have to get involved. So if you become detached, see, detach is very important. Detach does not mean you don't care or you don't love. You do not let the cosmic mind affect your mind. Because why? Because you are holding on to the Lord. So when you function and use your intelligence, use your intellect to work, then you're no longer a slave of your mind. You're no longer a slave of your emotions. You are in charge of your emotions. You are in charge of your life. So whether you want to take charge of your life or you want the world to run you, the choice is yours. That's where we make the choice. But that's a very good point. Thank you for bringing it up. Does it answer your question or you're not?
Pretty much brings an extra light to it. The Purusha itself brings some information encoded into it. So when it gets the person gets born, we probably have some already tendencies.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, we are born with certain tendencies and then we add to them. We are born with certain vasanas, certain tendencies, and as we go through life, we add good or bad tendencies. So there might be two children born in the same house. One becomes a criminal and one becomes a saint. Why does that happen? You know, they make the choice and the tendencies. Yeah, question.
And I see it almost as the grace of God. Mm-hmm. God is just, passing it down to certain people, and then they kind of go and they run with it.
True. Now that's a very good point. How did fire get discovered? Yeah. You know, or what surprises me is language. You know, all over the world there are different languages, so different from each other. And how did they all develop? And they all have the same principle. They have adjective and adverb and noun and pronoun. And they may call it different, but every language has the same ingredients. You know, subject, object, action, verbs, you know, passive verb, active verb. That's there in all. How did they all develop totally different languages in different parts of the world? But the underlying principle in all is the same. So that was the higher consciousness. You know, otherwise we would not have been able to communicate. You know, so it's very interesting. Thank you.
I was listening to as you said, there are people in other countries who develop all these different languages, but they all have things in common.
Right. Right. Thank you. It's a good discussion. Thank you very much. We'll do the closing prayer. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha. Sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kaschid dukha bhagavet. Om shanti 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 hari om shri gurubhyo namah hari om.